Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome tonight to a special edition of Beyond the Cover. Of course, I'm your host, John Roth, with Jeff Ayers. Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for doing this.
And tonight, we have very, very special guest, mega author, number one New York Times bestseller, Harlan Coben with us, talking about his latest book that was just released called The Stranger. So let's just introduce Harlan right now. So Harlan, thank you so much for coming on. How you doing tonight, sir?
It's great to be here. Thanks, guys. How you doing?
Doing great.
We're doing wonderful.
How's the weather out there,
right? We're so excited to have you on. Huh?
Weather good out there?
Oh, yeah. I'm in L.A. So
So it's always good. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
I live in New Jersey.
It's
not always so good here, man. It's tough.
Yeah, that's true. But with L.A., you got the weather, but we also have all the expense and all the traffic and all the other crap that goes with it, but I can't complain.
Yeah, we have no traffic in New Jersey, so I wouldn't know why you're talking about it all. So it's good to hear.
That's true. Yeah. I got a lot of family that lives in Jersey.
There.
So, Carlin, let's just jump right in here. The Stranger is your latest book.
Yep.
Jeff and I both read it. I reviewed it for Suspense Magazine. Jeff now reviewed it, too, so we got it out there. But can you give us a little behind-the-scenes look into The Stranger and what fans can expect that have not read it yet?
Well, I'm going to give a spoiler for those who haven't read the first three pages only, but after page three, you'll be all right. But it starts off with a man named Adam who's just, you know, at his kid's lacrosse, picking, you know, drafting the teams. And a man walks up to him, and this is actually a true website. This is what gave me the idea, and says, your wife never was really pregnant 3 years ago. She was faking it. She went to a site called fakeababy.com. where you can buy fake bellies, fake sonograms, fake pregnancy tests. You can actually do that. That's a real site. And just leaves them the information, tells them this, and walks away. And that's how the book opens. And we see the stranger do this with other people and other kind of secrets you keep online, dropping these bombs in these lies. And who is he? Where does it go from there? How does this blow up Adam's life? These are the questions that I hope the stranger raises and answers.
Well, absolutely love the book, obviously.
Thank you.
Yes. One of the questions that both John and I had, and got to ask you without giving anything away.
Yep.
you never explain why she did what she did regarding the pregnancy.
Well,
is there a reason for that?
Yeah, it's kind of explained why she did it. I don't want to go into detail on that, but
right,
you have to read a little closer. This was I wanted to do a little bit more about suburban life. I wanted to take a little look more at the behavior of certain people, about sports, how important it is in our as I sit here talking to you, of course, the NCAA finals is playing. And thinking about how much these parents push the kids, how crazy they go. I wanted to explore marriages and relationships. And mostly what I really wanted The Stranger to do is talk about secrets. Should you have secrets? Are they best revealed or are they best kept to themselves? And, you know, every person will come to a different conclusion. But that's more what it's like. And we trust when we go online that for some idiotic reason that our secrets are kept private. And, of course, they're not.
Right. Yeah, the one
in
thing.
Fact,
go ahead, Jeff. Go ahead, Jeff. You're up.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, sorry, I've got a little slow feed here tonight. I was going to say in my review, I actually said that real life doesn't come in a pretty box.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I really liked about this book.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to give it away. I think it's probably, Jeff, you've read a lot of my books, so you can maybe answer in JU too, John. This is one of my most shocking endings. I don't think people are going to guess. Not only are they going to guess it, but I wanted this ending to sort of resonate in a very different way. And no, I did not want this, you know, you get all the answers, but I did not want this wrapped up in a nice, neat package like I sometimes do.
Right.
Yeah, Jeff and I were talking off the air, and the thing about the ending is, of course, giving nothing away, whether you guess it or not, before the book ends. It doesn't make a difference because it's still, you know, it's still the way that the book should end. It's the way I like to put it. I mean, you almost
Thank
put
you.
It into a way that that's where it had to go. I think anything
Thank
else might have been a little disappointing. And you're welcome. And the thing that I
yeah.
love about your writing, and I've read several of your books, is how you're able to take normal people like myself, like Jeff, like you, and you're putting them in these situations that are not only psychology and psychologically, but, you know, physically taxing and things like that. Is that something that you just like to explore every time with your book, thinking maybe to yourself, how would I react to something like that?
Well, I think that every time, not just how I would react, it's putting myself in the place of a character and how that character would react. You know, I've written a lot of different kinds of books. I mean, Myron Bolitar, which I've written 10 novels of, he's a little better with his fists and a little more confident in these situations. Last
uh-huh.
book, the lead character was a female cop named Kat. She handled situations differently. But I do love doing the sort of the Hitchcockian ordinary man or an extraordinary circumstance, which I think The Stranger is. Adam, you know, in The Stranger is you and he's me. And that's a lot of fun to do, you know, to have a person have to react to what's going on in hopefully a realistic way. And hopefully you put yourself in Adam's shoes. What if, you know, Adam's living a normal life, he's got two teenage boys, and all of a sudden this bombshell is dropped on him. How would I react? How would you react? And I hope Adam becomes that kind of character for you.
Yeah, I think that that's the one thing while I was reading the book that I almost kind of stopped and let myself think about that, put myself maybe in that situation, like how I would do that. Now, of course, you maybe wrote it differently than how someone's going to think about that, and
right.
I think that that's the enjoyable part of when you're creating a character. So when you sat down to think about this book and you thought about Adam and you thought about the other characters that were going to be in the book, what is the one thing that you wanted to make sure you conveyed to the readers that they would get out of it character-wise in The Stranger?
The thing is, with every character I try to write is I really want them to be real. I don't care if they're nice. I want them to be real, and I want them to be a guy, if you were sitting at a bar and that guy was there, you'd want to talk to him because he's interesting in some way. And again, that does not mean he's nice. Doesn't mean he always does the right thing. And in Adam's case, I think Adam's a pretty gray guy. I think most of the people in the book are. I don't really like black and white anyway. And that's really what I'm trying to do. And I think that's how you relate to him. If Adam always was doing the right thing, I think you probably would find him boring if he always had the right answer. So that's
right.
more important to me, is that the guy feels real. And I'm hoping in The Stranger that Adam does feel real to you.
He does. He really does.
Thank you.
He was like my next-door mm-hmm. neighbor, so yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
One of the things I love about you, Harlan, is that every book from you is completely, in a way, you look at suburbia, but you also take sort of a different slant on it. And I'm curious, when you start your books, do you think about a series, or have you been mostly doing standalones now? What
yep.
makes that decision for you?
The idea. So the idea for this book was a man who revealed internet secrets to people on the one hand, and the story of Adam, who is dealt how he handles the blow of learning a secret about his wife. And then I say to myself, after I get this idea, who's going to tell the story? And if that story idea would fit for Myron Bolitar, he would be the one who would tell it. Most of the time it does not fit for Myron Bolitar, and I have to invent new people. So that's how I decide if it's going to be a standalone or a series. I never force it. I never write the series because people want it or any of that kind of stuff. I come up with the idea, and if it's right for Myron to tell it, he'll tell it. If it's not, I'll invent somebody new for it.
When you come up with your ideas, I guess, do you think about the beginning first? Do you think about the middle, or is the end come first for you?
The beginning comes first and then the end. So in this case, okay, this stranger comes over and he says this thing. I know how it's going to end for Adam and Corinne. I know what the stranger's up to. That's about all. I know how it's going to end, but I know nothing in the middle. I compare it to driving from my hometown of New Jersey out to Seattle or L.A., out to L.A. I may take Route 80, but chances are I'll go via the Suez Canal or Tokyo, but I always end up in L.A.
Yeah, I like kind of the way that it gets progressed, how you kind of move it through the story and how you kind of almost maybe probably surprise yourself. And so my question is, there's always, when you sit down to write, you always have these secondary characters that create a story. If without them, of course, it would be empty. So what secondary character in The Stranger do you feel maybe had a bigger voice than you thought that they were going to while you were kind of writing and constructing the book?
That's easy, Joanna. The cop from Beechwood, Ohio. There's a character like in the book before this. There was a character named Dana from Missing You, and this happens almost every book, where some character just comes to life and takes over in a way I don't expect. Doesn't mean that they come to life. I mean, I know it's all in my head, but I love to not necessarily follow the rules, have the hero always be the hero, that kind of thing, and. In this case, there's always two or three characters who come to life in a way I don't quite expect and do things I don't quite expect and really have a bigger part in the books than I expect. And in this case, it was a certain police officer from Beechwood, Ohio.
Yeah, she was great. I admit, I love
you.
That. Yeah, she was
great. Yeah, no, she was fun. She was fun.
Yeah, the thing that's nice about that also is I'm thinking of Wynn from the Bolitar novels. If you had him as the main character, I don't think I would like him as much.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
They do, yes. It happens all the time. People always say to me, I wish they had more Wynn. And I was like, nah, you probably want less Wynn. That's what, you know, if the response, of course, is, I wish you had less Wynn, I'd be in a lot of trouble. Yeah, it's part of it, is knowing how much to give of a character and how much not to. I always want you to want more. I mean, that's always what I want. I mean, I want The Stranger to be the book that you take to bed tonight at 10 o'clock at night and say, I'm just going to read for a half hour. Next thing you know, it's 4 in the morning. You couldn't stop turning pages. You're deliriously happy. That's the kind of book I always want to write. I want it to resonate in certain ways, but I really want it to be entertaining. I want it to be – the most important thing for me is narrative drive still, making sure that you are absolutely compelled to turn those pages.
Now, is there a subject matter that you will stay away from? Is there something that you do not want to go into while you're writing?
Nah, not really. I mean, you know, every time somebody rules something out, I find somebody does it well enough that they can rule it back. And I remember a number of years ago thinking, well, I don't want to see another book that involves child abuse. I mean, it's such a cliche. It's so bad. It's blah blah blah. And about 4 months later, my friend Dennis Lehane came out with Gone Baby Gone, which was a brilliant book. So, you know, it all depends on how it's handled, what's done, that kind of a thing. So I don't rule anything out. Unfortunately, in today's world, it's tough to be at all political because people go crazy. And sometimes just for fun, I will have characters take political viewpoints that I disagree with just for the hell of it. I write whatever I want to write. I've never worried about shying away. The subject I have no interest in writing about. I don't write particularly violent books. I don't like gore.
Nope.
I don't like cruelty. I prefer that psychological fear. But it doesn't mean I wouldn't do it. Just it's not what I'm doing.
I would be surprised if you actually did that, to be honest. Yeah, because it is psychological. And that's what I love about your books, among
Thank
other
you.
Things.
No, thanks. I appreciate
yeah.
that. Yeah, I'd better do with subtlety. I'd rather, you know, I had one book where I had a bad guy named Eric Wu, and he did damage with his finger. With fingers, he could do more. I can make you feel the pain more than if it was a knife, and I prefer that. I prefer something more subtle.
Right. I have to ask you about your covers, Harlan.
Yeah.
And I know that your early Bolitar novels, you have a nice little story about those, but... when you look at your covers, they're not really, I guess they're very pretty to look at, but they're not overly full of images. Could you talk a bit about, talk about the early Bolitar ones first.
Well, there
and then
I have
could
bleeding sports equipment on books. I had a bleeding football, then a bleeding tennis ball. I tell you, for a while we were doing sort of doorways. Caught had a red doorway, and then Live Wire had an arch, and I think Stay Close had like a broken fence, and then I don't even remember what the last book had. I'm not good with covers. I'm not a graphic artist, so I have to rely on my publisher. You know, they know marketing better than I do. I think The Stranger is one of the most beautiful covers I've had. I mean, the blue is really startling. Not so much online,
yes.
You can look at it online, but in person, I think it's a really cool cover and kind of conveys the meaning. But I never really, you know, Missing You had a beach scene, 6 years had a bench in the woods. I don't pick them, and I normally will say I like a cover or don't like a cover, but I really don't. I try not to get involved in parts of business that aren't my level of expertise, and that usually includes marketing and covers.
I want to remind everybody here first that we are also interviewing best-selling author, of course, Harlan Coben, talking about his latest book, The Stranger. You can go to harlancoben.com for a lot more information, not only on this book, but all of his books that he has out. And that's kind of where my question comes to you on this one, Harlan, is now that you do have, you know, so many books out and maybe people that are just finding you for the first time,
yep.
And they come up to you maybe in a book signing, where do you maybe tell them that they should start? Is there a certain book that you say start with this one?
I'm the worst judge, but I do think you can start with The Stranger. I do definitely think. Most people seem to answer Tell No One. That was my first New York Times bestseller. Jeff mm-hmm. could probably, and John, you could probably get a better answer than I could on which book to start with. But I'm the worst judge, so it's like asking me to, you know, be objective about my children. I can't be, you know, it's just it's what it is.
Well, why do you think Tell No One was your first breakout book?
Well, first of all, it was the first non-Myron Bolitar book in a lot of years. I think that a lot of people would not thought Myron Bolitar being a sports agent, they'd be sportsy books. You know, and then he ended up selling a lot more after the case, but a lot of people would not give him a try because of that. And I think Tell No One has a very compelling, you know, two-second plot. A man, you know, wife is murdered. 8 years later, he gets an email. He clicks a hyperlink. He sees a webcam, and his dead wife walks by. That's compelling. And
yeah.
So that's why. I think those are the reasons.
Where's
yeah,
the siren coming from? Are they coming out?
I was
going to
say, are they coming?
What's that?
Well, we're hearing a siren. I'm just wondering.
Yeah, they're coming after me right now. I'm actually in New York City, so that's why you're hearing sirens in the background.
constant
sound here in the big city.
In L.A., you just hear helicopters and people screaming. They don't.
Yes.
The cops don't turn their sirens on.
Here we got that.
So now I got one, Harlan, for you. Is of course there's more authors that are publishing now than ever before because of self-publishing with Amazon and everything that you can do. And
yep.
It's very difficult for a lot of people to really understand what the process is when you're going to a big six publisher, like a Simon & Schuster, Random House, Penguin, this and that.
Mm-hmm.
What is one of the one pieces of advice you give to a young author that maybe asks you, how can I be as successful as you?
Right. I mean, really right. It drives me crazy, in fact. I mean, Tell No One, which was my first New York Times bestseller, was my 10th novel. Now I've gotten emails from people saying, you know, I've written 2 self-published books. How come I'm not selling like Risham? I mean, it's really kind of silly. My best advice is to write the best book you can. Stop worrying about your Twitter feed and your Facebook, because none of that works. I don't know any writer who's made it by a great Twitter feed or a great Facebook or a great social media presence. Talking about fiction now, not nonfiction. Just keep writing great books. And if that's your best bet. Whenever the business end of it drives me crazy, I stick my fingers in my ear, go, la, 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 I can't hear you. And I write the best book that I can because I know if my book is good enough, it doesn't matter if e-book's going to be popular or stone tablets are going to be popular. You're going to read me. So that's my advice, is to stop all that kind of nonsense. You know, the other thing I tell people is if you want to really, you know, follow up and see who's been great, like what book has been the biggest breakout over the last 3 or 4 years? Gone Girl by Fonda, or Gillian Flynn's Gone Girl. So why don't you look at how Gillian Flynn does Twitter and how Gillian Flynn does Facebook? Here's the short answer. Gillian doesn't have a Twitter feed, and she doesn't do Facebook.
Same thing with Andrew Luck.
Yep,
if people have to understand. Yeah, I mean, if people know the NFL, Andrew Luck is the same way. He has none of that. He doesn't rely on any of that. He just lets his play do his talking. But when they're asking, okay, how do I understand about writing the best book I have to do, but what's one thing that I have to make sure that I get into it? Is it the plot? Is it the character development? Because I always try to tell people sometimes less is more. Don't get too involved with things. Keep it sometimes kind of simple, because that kind of keeps readers engaged.
Well, of course, it's all about editing. I mean, when I write a book, I have a file called spare. And when I'm not sure I should keep something in or not, I cut it out and I put it in the spare file in case I want to put it back. And usually in a 400-page book, spare will be anywhere from 50 to 100 pages, usually. I've written 27 novels. I've never once put anything back. Not once.
Wow.
Yeah, so you can always cut. That's a good rule of thumb. But the one thing that I've noticed also in every novel that's made it, every novel that breaks out, be it, I don't know, Da Vinci Code or Lovely Bones or Gone Girl or whatever, and that is they have narrative drive. It's the only consistent. You are reading it compulsively and you're not putting it down. That's the one thing that those books have in common.
Wow, yeah. So I'm curious, Harlan, why is it that Europe seems to love you, but Hollywood doesn't?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, you know, Hollywood's a strange, bizarre creature, and it could change around tomorrow. I have a bunch of projects movies that could break tomorrow, or it could be another year. I don't really pay much attention to the Hollywood stuff because I have no control over it. I have found that when I do things over in Europe, I get more of a say and get more power, so I enjoy that process more.
Okay. One of the things you just mentioned about your writing, I'm curious, how do you maintain – you talked about your file that you've not gone back to. How do you maintain the consistency from book to book?
Oh, I think paranoia and fear. I'm insecure. I always worry I'm not as good as I used to be. I'm always afraid I'm going to lose it. So I work that much harder to make sure that that's not the case. I never take it for granted. I never think I'm good. I never rely on past reputation. I always think I'm one book away from the poor farm. And all of those things, I think, combine to sort of help.
Well, I will have to say that you're probably not one book away from the poor farm. I'm just going to throw that out there. So you can put that to ease
Great.
Right now in your mind.
Thanks.
But that kind of does answer the question almost that I was going to ask is, what kind of keeps you going? What is the one thing that gets you back to your computer every time once you've, like, finished The Stranger? What brings you back to do the next one?
This is all I do. I have no other marketable skills. I'm not good at anything else. I'm disorganized. I'm forgetful. I'm not the brightest bulb. I'm given one talent, and it's an honor to be able to do it. I mean, think about it. People go in a bookstore. There's hundreds of thousands of books. They choose to take my book home and spend 5, 10, 12 hours reading it. That's one of the great honors in life. It's a huge responsibility, and I want to make sure that they feel it's worth it. It's extraordinarily flattering, and I never take that for granted.
How long does it take you to actually write a novel? Because you've been doing, well, two a year with the YA series.
The adult novels normally take me about 9 months. The YA series, which I've stopped after three now, took about 6 months, and no matter how much I tried, 9 plus 6 would not equal 12. So something had to give, and it ends up being the YA.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I was also going to ask you about one of the things they talk about, especially with new authors, is author branding. And I'm curious what your thoughts are on that.
Again, it's the kind of thing I let my publisher sort of handle as much as possible. I don't really know what that means, author branding. We try to, we've had different covers and things like that. So author branding just seems to me to be another word for author who's selling a lot of books and has name recognition, and you want to increase that. And that's natural. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Literary authors want that, and best-selling authors want that. So I don't really know, other than that's sort of publishing talk that I don't really pay attention to. So I don't really know. The short answer is I don't really know.
So, okay. Hey, Harlan, do you have time for one more question? Because we just had a caller here. They just asked a question, so I told them that I would ask you real fast if you can. They wanted to know, of the books that you've written, has there been any character that you've written that has kind of haunted you past once the book has been out that kind of just sticks with you, whether it could be a scary thing or just maybe, you know, something that just kind of sticks with you, certain character from one of your books?
A lot of them. I mean, that's why I repeat them. Lauren Muse, who was a cop, and I just thought would be in one book, ended up being, I think, at four or five in a row. Brenda Slaughter, who was one of Myron's girlfriends who met a tragic fate, she still kind of haunts me, and I she hasn't been in a book since 1998. There's a number of characters who stay with me. I don't really know exactly why, but there's plenty of them. That's part of it. What? They become real for you, and that's hopefully for you, the reader, too. And I still get emails on certain characters that I haven't written in a long time, and that's a lot of fun.
You're probably like, what book were they in? Oh, that's right. Now I remember what book they were in.
Sometimes.
Yeah, because when you hear that a lot from musicians that say that once they do an album, they never really go back and listen to it. I remember an Eddie Van Halen interview one time when he was going on tour, he literally had to go back and listen to one of his albums to say, I forgot how to play these songs because I haven't played them in so long.
I never reread my own books. I don't. Yeah. It would be the most painful thing in the world. In fact, I'm doing a TV series in France based on my book, No Second Chance. And I had to go back and reread it. I hadn't read it since, you know, that I finished writing it. It came out in 2003. It was a very strange experience.
Well, Harlan, we want to thank you so much for coming on. It's been an
absolute
pleasure.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Yes. Now we can go back. Now you can go run into the bar, go finish watching the game because
it's
coming down to the epic ending here.
That's right.
You know what? And this ending could be just like your book, unpredictable, and we don't know how it's going to happen until it gets done. So we want
to. There
we go.
Hopefully dramatic. Thanks, guys.
All right.
Thank you.
Good
talking to you. Thanks.
So again, everybody, that is author Harlan Coben with his latest book, The Stranger, out now wherever you can buy books. You can go get it. And like I said, I mean, I don't know what else to say anymore about him, Jeff. I mean, he is one of the top authors out there today of our generation, I would have to say, in the suspense thriller category. And go to harlancoben.com, of course, for a lot more information about everything that he's written, and of course, including The Stranger that is out now. So let's take a break, and we are going to be back here after the break. We're going to talk about the International Thriller Writers Awards. We have the list. We know who's up. We're going to make our selections. We're going to make our guesses to see what we think, maybe talk a little bit about them. And, of course, we always have some reviews on tap for you. So stick around, everybody, after the break, and we will see you on the other side.
Hello, everybody, and I'd like to talk to you about some upcoming releases that are out now. Arthur Barbara Petty delivers the first book in a new series called What Has Mother Done? The title itself suggests a riveting mystery wrapped up within a drama. Reviewers have agreed that Barbara penned a winner, so check out Amazon.com for more on What Has Mother Done by Barbara Petty. Five gripping new mysteries await you from publisher Camel Press: Stealing the Golden Dream, Due for Discard, and Split to Splinters are just a few of the wonderful books being published by Camel Press. Check out all their titles by visiting camelpress.com. The Thriller Master is back with a sequel. Yes, David Morrell releases Inspector of the Dead, which brings back character Thomas De Quincey. Murder as a Fine Art was the first book and was listed on several of the top lists in 2014. Now experience more of 1850s London and Inspector of the Dead. Go to davidmorrell.net for more information on these and all of his books. Kensington Kills. Well, not really, but their books sure do. And author Lisa Jackson and M. William Phelps, A.J. Tana, and more deliver explosive action and intrigue with every page. Make sure you visit kensingtonbooks.com for more information on these and every title they have to offer, and you won't be sorry. Suspense Theater comes alive with Amon Kabachnik. His Blood on the Stage books bring readers a wealth of material for lovers of the stage, says the Los Angeles Times. check out where stories come alive and visit Aman Kabachik for more information on all six of these titles. And that's AmonKabachik.com. A century-old tale leads to a fortune in Bandit Gold. That's the adventure that Jack Farrell faces in his latest adventure, Murrieta Gold, by author William Nickel. This is the fourth book in the series. And visit William Nickel, that's two Ks, EL.com for more information on this and the entire series.
Everybody, after the break again, thank you so much to Harlan Coburn for coming on the show. What a fantastic guest, Jeff, without a doubt. One of the finest. I mean, we had Jeffrey Deaver on last show. We've had Tess Gerritsen on. Now we have Harlan Coburn. Shit, I mean, I guess the only way we can go up now is, what, Dean Koontz and Stephen King, right?
Well, I was going to say Harlan is one of my favorite authors, hands down, and it was just a thrill. I was trying not to be a fanboy, so...
I know.
This was a pleasure, so thanks.
Yeah. I try to treat every guest exactly the same and just look
right.
at them as just a name when I'm interviewing them, because then otherwise I would be like, oh, my God, Harlan, if I send you my book, will you autograph and send it back for me, please, and maybe, like, spray some perfume on it? But, I mean, it's tough to do. And I hear a lot of interviewers that kind of do act like that, and I'm like, the show is not about you, Mr. Interviewer. The show is about the guest. And so I try to I think a lot of people fall into that. I mean, they're fans first, and we do a good job, I think, of not doing that. But, okay, so let's
go. And I've heard the exact opposite, though. I was going to say, I've heard the exact opposite, where somebody will just say, so I heard you wrote a book. What's it about? And you know, they don't know who this guy is. And that drives me nuts even more.
Yeah, they're like,
but you had
you
something.
What,
go for
you,
it.
Yeah, well, yeah, you could sit there and I think, didn't Jeffrey Deaver say that when he walked up and he's like, yeah, I'm not Jeffrey Archer.
Yes.
he said on our show two weeks ago. So, but you know what? It's review time. So it's time to jump on our bookshelf and kind of see what we're reading. So let's go to you first. What do you got going on this week?
I want to talk about a book called House of Echoes by Brendan Duffy.
Okay,
and
I never heard of that one.
It starts off pretty amazing. It's this book that sort of combines suspense and horror, and it's about a family that they live in New York, and then they inherit this estate, and so they go there, and then, of course, you know, it's out in the woods, and all this creepy, strange stuff starts to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And... as it
is
goes,
that the beginning?
Builds,
is that like is that like the beginning premise?
Yes.
Okay.
So then as it goes along, it gets more and more intriguing and interesting. And then I gotta tell you, the ending. And I don't like to give away endings, and I'm not gonna give away endings here, but it is without a doubt the worst ending I've ever read in my entire life. It is such a terrible ending that I don't know if the author was lazy or forgot what he was writing about or something, but And I'm not giving anything away here, but I threw the book across the room and I said, "You've got to be kidding."
You really pissed you off that much?
It did. Tell you off the air about it if you want, but I got to tell you, everybody else I've talked to who's read this book has sort of had the same reaction. So I'm curious to see when the reviews are officially out on this book, what they're saying about it. Because I've seen starred reviews, but I'm thinking they didn't finish the book.
Oh, well, that could be true. But you know, so here's the thing. You know that sometimes a lot of those reviews that you see on the Amazons and you see on those things, you really got to filter them through the correct way, because there was a lot of that, what was that puppeting or whatever the hell they were calling that stuff. And a lot of those reviews are fake. We have an author, and I won't give his name, but he emailed us and he said, "Hey, there's a guy who just literally in the last day put reviews up of 1 star on 4 of my books." He's like, "There's no way they read them all," because he kind of said the same thing. And I'm like, "Look," I said, I think a lot of intelligent people, when they go to Amazon, and Jeff, you probably do the same thing, when you go to look at a review, I look and see how many people kind of say the same thing. And if you got one crazy person that's out there saying something stupid, I always discard that. I throw it away and I just forget about it, because someone will say, "Oh, this product didn't work for me." But then you have 1,000 other people that say, "Yeah, the product worked great." Well, I don't believe the person that said it didn't work for them. I'll believe the 1,000 that said it did work. So I'll look at the, you know, the 800 5-star and 4-star reviews, and I'll kind of disregard the 22 and 1-star reviews, because I don't know their motives. And I hope a lot of people do that too, whenever they're looking at reviews of books. And I think that when you're on Amazon, you can tell if someone actually read the book or if someone's just trying to pull your chain.
Right. Yeah. You can definitely tell.
Yeah. So what's the other book you got? Hopefully you like this
one. I love this one. I'm reading, and I'm almost done, and I know he's not going to disappoint me. Brad Parks. I love Brad Parks.
Oh, Brad. Great guy. A great guy, too.
He is. Got to get him on the show. Let's see if we can do that. But new book is another Carter Ross mystery. Carter Ross is a reporter. And those investigative reporter novels, there's so many of them now, and some do them better than others. Brad does them well. And this one, he has to make a choice between his own life, life of his girlfriend, and unborn child. And
wow,
saying that you think it'd be depressing and bleak, but one of the things I love about Brad's books is they're absolutely hysterical, while also the suspense is going on.
Right.
So absolutely terrific book.
Yeah, that's the one thing, and you know, in suspense or thriller books, it kind of either goes the way of what, romance or comedic. Those are like the two secondary, I think, traits that kind of go in. Some people, the comedic stuff falls short. Some people, the romantic stuff falls short. But, yeah, Brad is one of those, you know, he does the good kind of very funny comedic stuff, where I think Andrew Gross is one of the very good romantic sexual stuff when he's in a book. So I think it's one of those, you know, cool things.
Yeah.
If I
want to give a book that's funny to somebody that's a good thriller, I would give him either a Brad Parks or David Rosenfeld. And his series with Andy Carpenter are just, they're scream and a half. Do you know his stuff?
I don't. I mean, there's so many. Oh. I can't keep track of everything.
Oh, of course.
You know how many? I mean, we got, we figured out, I think last year, we got over 7,000 books. So we just can't review them all. I mean, there's just so many. We just can't get to them all. And I mean, I always tell people when they email me and they say, "Hey, can you, can you review the book and can you look at it?" And I say, "Yeah, you can send it in, but I have to give you my disclosure is, you know, here's the disclaimer. We get over 7,000 books a year, so we can't guarantee anything. You know, we'll try to do our best." And and unlike some review places that only will do the big six, which appalls me, and I know I've said that before, is that
right.
I don't look at the publisher. I don't know who the publisher is. I look at the books and I say, I like that one. And I'll just take it out. I'll read the back of it. Because I got to face it, the title gets me first. Right now, I cannot read any military political thrillers. Right now, there seem to be more like vampire zombie books to me. It's way too saturated. I can't do it. So if I see anything that looks like that, I pass it over. And I'll pick up, and if it's an author that I recognize, maybe I'll look at it a little closer. But if it's one that I don't, I'll read the back of the book, and I'll be like, oh, that's good to me, and I'll take it. It won't even be maybe until I decide to look at the piece of paper that comes with the book, who the even publisher even is, because I don't really care. It doesn't make any difference to me.
That's right. It's all about the book.
Yeah. So yeah. Here's my two. I got two.
Okay.
So the one I just finished reading and is a Murder, She Wrote book. I love whodunit mysteries. I'm an Agatha Christie guru and love Agatha Christie stuff. And Murder, She Wrote is one of my favorite all-time shows. So I think they're on book 43 now, and it's called Killer in the Kitchen, and it comes out tomorrow. And for fans of the show, when you're reading these books, you can literally hear the character speaking while they're talking. It's like you hear their voice. And and Donald Bain gets it so close to how they would actually react and the things that they would say that it's fantastic. And, of course, it's a wonderful book in the fact of it is true Murder, She Wrote style. And it's just a perfect, perfect, I guess you want to say, compliment to the TV show. And I'm so
that's
glad
great.
They never did a spinoff. Yeah, and so that's it. Killer yeah. in the Kitchen. That's the latest
one
comes out tomorrow.
There's an author who has a theory about Jessica Fletcher that says that she's the greatest serial killer ever. Yeah, is able to kill everybody and then blame it on somebody else.
Yeah, you've been talking to my wife.
There's an author who talks like that, too, so.
Well, one of the authors that we publish is Tom Sawyer. And, of course, Tom Sawyer was executive producer on the show, I think, from season 7 on, but he wrote a couple episodes before that. And he always said on the set they would call her the Angel of Death. That was their thing for her, so that's kind of funny. Now, here's the other thing, and I want to get your reaction because we want to make sure we get enough time to talk about these thriller awards. The one thing that we did in the magazine this month is we did a nonfiction book, and we did it with Marky Ramone, and it was Punk Rock Blitzkrieg, and that's the first time we've ever done a nonfiction biography book in the magazine, and the reason why I did it, and I wanted to get your reaction, did you like the direction that we took by interviewing Marky Ramone and putting the book in to the magazine as a showcase feature? Did you like that first?
Actually, I thought it was a great idea. Because there's some great nonfiction books out there that read like thrillers, so I totally am into that.
Yeah, it was a risk. I got to admit, when we got the email, I was like, "Boy, of course I would love to talk to Marky Ramone, but does it work? That I don't know." So we decided to go for it and do it, and I think it came out beautifully when we talked to him because we didn't just talk to him about his book. I mean, we talked to him about how he wrote it. Some of the things, of course, that were in it, and we kind of stirred away a little bit from the music side. It was just more along the lines of, you know what, he was basically, you know, he wasn't the author, he was the narrator to the author, and I think that that's the one thing that we tried to focus on, but yeah, that was, I'm glad people liked it. We had a couple other people that literally emailed me and said, God, love the Marky Ramone thing, so I thought that was kind of cool. So I just wanted to get your reaction, because it's something that we might do in the future if we have the opportunity.
I would say you absolutely have to. That was a lot of fun. And I admit I'm not much of a Ramones fan, but I thought the article was terrific.
Yeah, and the stories.
That's not
to say
I don't like some of their music, but yeah.
Yeah, gobble gobble hey. But the stuff in the book, I mean, it's pretty freaking incredible, some of the things that they had to go through. But let's get into the awards here. Again, these are the 2015 Thriller Awards as nominated on by the I to be announced this year at Thriller Fest. Of course, that is in July in New York City. And you can go to thrillerwriters.org, and you'll find it there. And, of course, you can go to thrillerfest.com for a lot more information. So let's hit it right now with the best hardcover novel, and let's see who the nominees are. I'll read off the best hardcover, and then why don't you do the best first novel. Okay, Jeff?
Sounds good.
So the best hardcover this year is Meg Abbott with The Fever. Then we have Lauren Beukes, B-E-U-K-E-S, with Broken Monsters. Joseph Finder with Suspicion. Greg Isles, Natchez Burning, and Chevy Stevens, That Night. Which one you like in there?
I got to say, of the ones I've read, there's a couple I have not. Of the ones I've read, I think the Greg Isles is the front runner, in my opinion. Even though I like the other guess too.
Yeah, I was going to go with Greg Isles, Natchez Burning. Of course, Greg Isles, if people might not know, he's actually the author that's the creator of the show 24. So that's the kind of style of stuff you can get. The first season of 24 was built off of stuff that he had written. So I don't know how many people realize that. So go to Beth's first novel.
The nominees are Ray Celestin, and that's C-E-L-E-S-T-I-N, for the Axeman's Jazz. Julia Dahl, D-A-H-L, for Invisible City. Alan Eskins, for The Life We Bury. Laura McHugh, for The Weight of Blood. And Andy Weir, for The Martian. And
your vote?
I got to tell you, The Martian was one of the best books I read last year, hands down.
And quite frankly, I'm going to be honest, I didn't read any of them, so I can't have a guess. So I will agree with what you said, and Andy Weir and The Martian. I did not read any of those books, so I don't want to really make a guesstimation about it. So we'll go with your guesstimation on Andy Weir, The Martian, for Best First Novel. All right,
and
that's the
I
next
should
category.
Say, and for both of us, hang on, we're not knocking anybody here.
This is just because
we're making guesses, right? Okay,
yeah,
clarify that for our listeners. Okay,
this is just cool. Put it this way: every book that we mention, there's a reason why they're on this list. But like with everything, there's a winner, and then there's ones that did not win. And I'd never like to use the term loser. There's not a winner and a loser. There's a winner. And then there's others that did not win. So I just want to make sure that people understand that. Okay, so here we are. Best paperback original novel. We have Shelley Coryell with The Buried. We have Robert Dugani, a friend of both of ours, My Sister's Grave. We have James Hannibal with Shadowmaker. We have Rick Mofina with Whirlwind. And we have Vincent Zandre with Moonlight Weeps. I got to tell you, this is going to be a toughie, but I'm going to go with my pick because his work is fantastic. He is a fantastic guy. He creates and writes fantastic stuff. My vote on this one is going to be Vincent Zandre, Moonlight Weeps.
And I got to tell you, I've read four of the five in this category, and two of them made my list for best of the year. It's tight and tough, but I got to go with My Sister's Grave by Robert Dugani. That book just blew me away. Yeah. It's his best book by far.
You can't go wrong. I mean, with any of them in here. I mean, this is a toughie.
True.
This is going to be a toughie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would not be disappointed with anybody winning in this category, really.
Now, I didn't read any of the short stories. I don't know if you did. Did you want to skip that one?
I did not. Sorry.
Okay, let's get the best short story, and we'll just go right now to best young adult novel. So take it away with best young adult novel.
Oh, it's just because you can't pronounce this first name.
Yep.
And the first one is L. Casamano, and that's C-O-S-I-M-A-N-O, and that's for Nearly Gone. And then Kristen Lippert-Martin for Tabula Rasa. Meredith McArdle for The Eighth Guardian, Victoria Schwab for The Unbound, and Kara Taylor for Wicked Little Secrets.
Ooh. 2 years ago, I was a judge in this category.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. 2 years ago, I was a judge in that category. All right, so who do you think? What do you got on this one?
I got to tell you, I'm not really sure. I've read just one of the five, and I thought it was okay. I liked it, but since I haven't read the others, I can't give you an honest opinion, and I'm sorry.
Well, I do know three out of the five authors, so I'm going to give the one, and I didn't read any of the books here. I have to be honest again. I mean, I'm not a big YA novel, and if I am, it's going to be more Star Wars stuff than anything else if I'm into the YA. But I will say that Kara Taylor, Wicked Little Secrets, and Victoria Schwab in The Unbound, those are the two authors. I would pick one of those two, and I it's tough for me to say which one. But I would go one of those two. That would just be my guess.
Okay.
All right, let's finish it off here, because here we go. The last category is Best Ebook Original Novel. And we have Sean Black with Post. We have Leighton Green with the Metexi Project. We have Michael Logan in Wannabes, C.J. Lyons in Hardfall, and Gil Reville in 13 Hollywood Apes. I tell you what, I love C.J. Lyons, and so she's my pick with Hardfall. And I think she won an award last year or 2 years ago. But C.J. Lyons or Leighton Green was my two, but I went with C.J. Lyons and Hardfall.
I have to agree with you on C.J., and she did win a couple years ago.
Okay, it was a couple years ago.
In the same category. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And, she's consistently great. I love her stuff, and this one was another great one.
Yeah. So, but which I guess you want to say, the biggest category that we could go back to, of course, is the best hardcover novel. Is there one or two books that you think maybe should have made the list that did not make the list?
Oh, that's a great question.
I know, we didn't even prep this beforehand. That sucks.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
And just in case people are listening, the NCAA title game is just about to be over with. 15 seconds to go, Duke's up five. Yeah. 15 seconds to go, Wisconsin just missed a shot, Duke's up five, and Duke's going to the free throw line, so that's just going to about do it. But a great game. So congratulations to Duke. Okay. So are there any ones that, like I said, that you feel – should have been on there that are not on there. I'll say
two.
What, Stephen King Revival should have been on there, I think for sure.
I think Hank Philippe Ryan's Truth Be Told should be there.
Ooh, that's a good one.
And I also have to say I also love The Lost Key by J.T. Ellison and Catherine Coulter.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's one thing you never see either. I don't think I've ever seen in these categories a co-authored book.
Did Preston and Child get nominated once?
Yeah, but, you know, that might be different. I'm talking about Catherine Coulter and J.T. Ellison a James Rollins or Rebecca Cantrell, like two authors that were maybe put together for that in that category. But not authors that write together all the time and Preston and Child. You know what I mean? Something
oh, I got
like
you.
That.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
I would agree with
but
you.
Where the hell is David Morrell for Murder at the Fine Art?
That came out the year before.
Maybe that's why I'm not seeing it.
Yeah. Otherwise, it should be
there.
Was that
2003?
Yeah.
Or 2003? No, it came out June 10th, 2014.
No, that was the hang on. We're gonna double check.
Oh, wait a second. Are you sure? Oh, maybe it was.
Yep.
I could be wrong. I lose track of my dates. Well, all I know is Inspector of the Dead better be on next year's freaking list for 2015 March. In
oh my
March
God!
2015.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Inspector of the Dead should be on there. Okay, I my fault. I thought
May
7th,
2013.
Okay.
Yeah, it was 2013.
Okay.
Yeah.
I lose track of time. Jesus, I mean, I'm stoned half the time anyway, so what am I supposed to do? That's a joke, people. I'm not stoned half the time, just a quarter of the time.
All the time.
So, yeah. But it's, I'll tell you what. What a great guest. We had a fabulous show, Harlan Coben. Jeff, it's always, I'll tell you what, we're having a lot of fun doing the show, having some great guests. Who do we got coming up in 2 weeks?
Actually, it's three because I have to admit that in 2 weeks I'm going to be in the middle of Yosemite National Park and it'll be hard to do the show, so I
yeah,
do apologize.
Right. April 27th. That's April 27th, Simon Gervais. And you want to get some inside scoop into some stuff that he has going on. I guess, what would you say? Would you say FBI stuff? CIA? I mean...
He worked corporate security, and he
yeah.
is a security and an enforcement expert. And
right.
he owns
I mean,
the record at Thriller Fest for getting an agent and a book deal.
Oh. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
But I know... Yeah,
pitched,
I mean, I know
he's pitched his book on Thursday
stuff.
And had an agent on Friday.
Well, that's all it takes, doesn't
yeah.
it? See, it's as easy
yep.
as that. It's as easy as that.
Yep.
Well, all right, everybody. I mean, Jeff, it's always a pleasure. Love talking to you. We're going to see everybody again. You have to go to suspenseradionetwork.com for more information. That's the most updated list. April 27th. Will be the next show at Simon Gervais, of course, at 7:30 Pacific time on Monday. But you can hear every show on demand. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes by going there and clicking Suspense Radio, and then you'll see it. You come up, hit subscribe, and you get it right when the show's over. About an hour later, it comes right into your iPod, iPhone, whatever you got. It'll be there. So, Jeff, it's always a pleasure. You're going to Yosemite, and I'm going to the bathroom.
All right, well, take care, and thanks. It's been a pleasure.
All right. So there you go, everybody. Good night. Enjoy, and we will see you all in 3 weeks. Again, suspenseradionetwork.com for the most up-to-date information. Check out suspensemagazine.com for the latest issue. Email us if you don't have it. We'll send it out to you. And I know we posted the last issue for free, so you can go on our Facebook page and get that or tweet it or wherever we put it out. It was out there somewhere. So until next time, everybody, good night, goodbye, and we will talk to you all in 3 weeks.